Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier. Game on. Go.
It's Tuesday night and it's time for golf. And obviously we had golf last weekend in Abu Dhabi. And Gary, you were there. It was the first time the slow play rules were in play.
Yeah.
What did you make of it all?
It was good. There was I was actually on the bus back to the hotel on Sunday evening, and Andy McPhee, who's the boss, the kind of chief referee alongside John Parramore, he was delighted with it. The only issue he kind of had was the fact that it wasn't a full field. There was 126, I think, or normally a full field in the summertime because the daylight would be 156. And he's kind of hoping it doesn't revert back to type then. But yeah, they were much quicker. The biggest issue is always at the weekend when there's three balls. You know, you ideally want two balls. People get around a lot better. But it was good. There was a couple of bad times. No penalties. So nobody got done. But I think overall everyone seemed pleased.
Andy McPhee said it was 10 minutes quicker this year. Is that a lot?
Doesn't sound like a lot, but it is, because it is a lot. I guess it's almost a full hole, really. So it's still too slow. Everyone believes that. But I think over the course of time, all the tours have to be doing the same thing. It's great that the European Tour are taking the lead on it. But, you know, it's difficult then for the kind of guys that play in Europe and then go over and play the PGA Tour, and it's a different pace. Nobody wants slow play. Bryson DeChambeau was one of the star players there last week. He obviously played rubbish and missed the cut, but you know, he would be the one of the main guys guilty of that, so it's a pity he didn't get caught.
But he looked great.
Craig, do you think referees will stick to it? Will they implement it?
I think the two men that you've referenced there, it's character that it's all about, because both Andy McPhee and John Parramore, while they're really friends with the players in many sense, Gary, I think it's fair to say that there's the ultimate respect for those two
Absolutely.
Men. They're both large, imposing individuals for a start.
Yeah.
And they both just command respect because they're extremely experienced. But also, players know that a penalty will be implemented on the European Tour because, like, John Parramore stood up to Seve Ballesteros very famously in a ruling in Valderrama a long time ago. And that kind of set the stall out that if players with referees like Parramore and McPhee do something that's wrong, they will be punished. However, the question is, on the PGA Tour, as elaborate as their rules are, invoking ShotLink, which is their GPS system to keep track of players, and they announced their plans to have a slow play policy this time last week, in fact. The idea that those rules are now elaborately in place, all written down, all there to be seen, will they be implemented? That remains to be seen.
So the winner was Lee Westwood. Mm-hmm. And Gary, four different decades to win. Like, just put into context, like, how big a deal is that?
It's enormous. To play in four different decades, never mind to win in four different decades, is incredible. He won, you know, he got out on tour first out and won within 18 months or so, and has been just successful the whole way through. Hit the skids. He's only really had one kind of dip in form in his career, which is remarkable. His 25th European Tour win, I think his 37th win as a pro. He's 47 in a few weeks' time. And he was asked afterwards about the Ryder Cup, and he was like, oh, I've played 10. I've kind of, you know, had enough as such. But he's back in the equation. He's won a Rolex event. He's up to, I think, 29 in the world rankings now. Gets into all the majors. He was already in two of them, but he's in the other two. He's in all the WGCs, so he's got a great opportunity to possibly get back on that team. And you'd have to say, when he played in 2016, he kind of thought that was it, but he'd be a huge addition to Harrington, experience-wise.
And also, he would be playing the Ryder Cup in four different decades. That would be extraordinary. 1997, he partnered Faldo, and in fact, he dragged Faldo around. Faldo was not at the end of his abilities because he won, I think, the Nissan Open either that year or the year after. But Westwood came out and he literally was the strong man in a partnership with Nick Faldo. That's how good Westwood was straight out of the box. I was really impressed by the way he closed it out, because I don't think his nerves have been the best over the past few years. The very short putts have given him the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
Looking at him has been, you know, you almost have to look away when he stood over a 2 foot putt. But he holed out brilliantly.
He's got that claw grip again.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It works. Gary, it look, does. Look at the way Tommy uses it. You know, and Tommy wasn't a great putter until he went to
The thing, like the sign of a champion, was the fact that coming down, and I actually had his game. I was walking around with him, and you never really felt nervous for him that he wasn't going to win. He had a bit of a situation on 14, and he had a phenomenal bunker shot. And then, you know, 16, he dropped a shot. But 17, 18, the way he played those two holes, he didn't really fear from coming in. You know, at times, if you want someone to win a tournament, you'd seen him down the stretch here, but, you know, a bit like Shane at the Open or whatever, or in Abu Dhabi last year. But Lee just looked so composed, and that's why he's won so much.
And back in 2000, like, that's what, it's 20 years ago. He won 5 times, I think, in 2000, and he was the ultimate closer.
Yeah.
And he kind of lost it for a while.
He did, yeah.
But he looked like it again last weekend.
But he was the world number one at one stage.
He was, yeah, but he... But, you know, you see a lot of players when they get to, I don't know how it's going to go at the moment because they're so much fitter and stronger now than what they once were. Our career is going to be longer. I'd probably suggest they're a little more finely tuned, and it might be a different case. But he just seems to be in a different place on the course. He fired his caddy, Billy Foster, a couple of years ago, quite harshly, because he wanted to do his own thing on the course and not be as dominated by a caddy. And he just looks a lot more, just a lot calmer. Like, he was never a guy that really got that wound up, but he just seems a lot more calmer. And
maybe was his wife caddying for him?
No.
Or his girlfriend?
No, James Baker was on the back, who just finished with Martin Kaymer, so it was a nice week's work for him.
Yeah, Martin Kaymer's got Craig Connolly on the bag.
The wee man, yeah.
And that could be a very good
Kaymer's got all his old team back together that he had when he was world number one.
I'm probably going to be proved wrong here, but I'm such a fan of Martin Kaymer because he's one of the most plugged in members of the golf fraternity into the human race, because he's a normal human being, even when he was world number one. But I think he could have a comeback season this year.
Good shit.
I'm a big fan of Brooks Koepka, since I'm a fan of everyone today, even though he says nothing. He's back playing competitively again. How did he look?
He looked like Brooks Koepka in the majors in the first round, and then he looked like someone who had had 3 months off and his tournament kind of petered out. I reckon after probably halfway through the third round, he was fiddling with his game and just working on a few things and trying to get back. He's got a week off. It's weird, like, he's got a week off this week. He's in Dubai and the tournament's in Dubai and he's not playing. And then he goes to Saudi next week. It's very hard to tell with him because he's, you know, even when he's winning majors or playing regular events, he still looks the same. So it's very hard to get a read on his body language.
Obviously, he's going to Saudi next week and Rory's not, but Shane Lowry is. He got a bit of criticism in the papers this morning. Do you think fairly or unfairly?
I think unfairly. And the reason I would stand up for him is the reason that I've always stood up for Rory McIlroy. That they're not political footballers, they're just sports people. And it's not a cop-out. It's up for governments to sort out stuff. I don't think for sports people to go there. And if, as we've seen over the course of time with golf, in South Africa when they had all that stuff going on back in the day with apartheid, sport does open up countries. And maybe they're trying to do it through sport. So I think we should just judge them for the sport they play, not for their political views.
Yeah, I think it's a hard one. I know they have a huge horse race meeting at the end of the month as well. The Saudi Cup is going to be run, and I imagine Irish horses will go as well.
Yeah.
I think it's a difficult one when you try to cross sport with politics.
They're all self-employed as well. I mean, if they don't travel and play, you know, you can say other countries that they go to don't have the best track record in other situations. So what are we all supposed to do? Stay at home? You know, I think going to some of these places, whilst I don't agree with the politics of the country they're going to, but I'm going there to work. I'm self-employed, so, you know, I'm not in a position to go. I'm not going to go because of certain regime. It's a week's work for me.
I agree with you. I don't agree with the politics either, but I think you have to go as well.
Well, if no one goes, no one's ever going to find out about these places either.
But a lot of these countries are actively using sport to detract from what's happening within their country and their treatment of people, of their human rights issues. And, like, the big golf tournaments, the big music festivals, mm-hmm. like that's sports washing.
It's well, is it to detract or is it to kind of go, maybe we need, we maybe need to slowly change what we're doing and the way we're behaving. And if we're going to open up our country to different people that have never been here before, maybe that's a start. If you look at South Africa now, where they played a European Tour event just 2 weeks ago, compared to, you know, Des Smith, who was one of those players who won in four decades as well. You know, when they went down to play there in the early 80s, things were totally different to what they are now. So maybe in years to come, because of what's happening right now, might be something that will change their mindset on maybe how... Because a lot of these countries, you say sports washing, but most people in these countries are brainwashed. So if they see different people coming in, maybe they might open doors as well from them to think differently and challenge their politicians within their own country. So
a lot of the people in these countries as well, though, can't leave these countries. You know, they're there and they can't get passports and they can't get out of it and they have to do work that they don't want to do.
Absolutely. We had a caddy on the European Tour who was from Zimbabwe. And he was with a good player and he went home to change his passport in Zimbabwe. Couldn't get a new passport. And that was only 10 or 12 years ago. But yet, you know, that regime was allowed to go on for however long that it went on. But eventually you would like to think that common sense might prevail in some of these countries. And I think if nobody ever goes there, I don't think anything will ever happen.
Exactly. Maybe it's the start of change. And speaking of change, Greg, if Rory McIlroy was to win the Farmers Insurance Open at the weekend in Torrey Pines, there could be a change at the top of the world rankings.
Yeah, he'd be back as number one. And look, Rory McIlroy, for me, because of the amount of world ranking points he won in 2019, which was vastly more than anybody else, he was effectively the world number one in 2019. The actual official world golf rankings are done with a very sophisticated mathematical calculation over a two-year period. But based on 2019 and on pure amount of world ranking points won, Rory was the best player in terms of world ranking points in 2019. And he's ready to take over that number one spot. I think the reason he's probably ready to do it, not only is his game, I think, going to come out of the winter quite well. I notice he's got a brand new set of clubs. Driver, 3-wood, 5-wood, hybrid, all new TaylorMade sim drive equipment, which obviously is his affiliation. And it looks as though, from what I've heard, he loves it. And I think he was fifth in San Diego last year. I don't think San Diego is a golf course that, you know, you come to for the first time and have a chance of winning because it's tough. I think now that he knows it well, I think he'll, between the North course and the South course, I think he could be very, very much in contention. And this is the thing about Rory, the 19 top 10 finishes out of 24 starts last year shows that he's a different animal in terms of consistency.
That's some record, isn't it? And obviously Tiger's won there in the past and he's playing at the weekend, bidding to become the winning most golfer on the PGA Tour. Uh-huh. What can we expect from him at the weekend?
I'd say it depends on the weather with Tiger, because as we've seen the last kind of 12 months, when it gets a bit cold and not great, his body doesn't seem to respond to it too well. I think Tiger will have a good year. I think he probably won't play a huge amount.
It'd be 13, 14 times.
Yeah, which is a pity, because you want to see him playing as much as he can. But I think the big guy to look for in the PGA Tour this year is the Korean Sung Jae-im. Like, it's inconceivable to think that he's not going to win at some stage. So he'd be my one to watch this week.
The New York Times did a big piece on Tiger yesterday and his desire to play in the Olympics. He said that he might have to play a little bit more than he'd like to in 2020 to try and make it. Do you think we'll see him at the Olympics?
I hope so for the Olympics, because this would probably be his last Olympics. You would have to guess he's not going to be at the top of the tree in 4 years' time. And it would be just tragic to think that there'd be Olympics, you know, that his name wouldn't be associated when you look back in 30, 40 years' time. So hopefully he makes it, but that American team would be pretty good if he's not on it.
And obviously, Greg, or not obviously, but at the weekend, Leona Maguire starts her LPGA Tour. It's an exciting time for her.
Oh, like Leona, 130-odd weeks as the world's number one amateur, and she now has a full LPGA card, and she won't get into some events maybe later in the season if she doesn't play well early on, but in the early season events, she's got a chance to secure her full, I suppose, quota of tournaments that she wants to play in. Some of the restricted field events are one of the ones that she's going to have to play well early on in the season to have a chance of playing in. But the whole thing about Leona is, are we going to see the talent that was the world's best amateur come out as a professional? And I think it's really interesting to see that The champion in this week last year, it's not the same tournament, I think, is Céline Boutier. And Céline Boutier went to Duke with Duke University with Leona. Now, Leona was the world's best golfer. And since her time at Duke University, fellow players went on to become professionals while she stayed amateur. And Bronte Law being one of them. Mm-hmm. And they've all either won or have played Solheim Cup. And Céline Boutier won last year on the LPGA Tour. The question is Leona ready to make that, you know, leap? Not just to become someone who retains her card, but someone who's going to become a world's top 20 player, capable of winning on the LPGA Tour, and become the first Irish woman to win on a major ladies' professional tour, women's professional tour. That's the question. Is she up for it? She's not the longest off the tee. She's around 255 off the tee. You've got Brooke Henderson hitting at 280, Lexi Thompson hitting at 280. But 255 is about average, field average. So she has to do it her own way. So does she chase something she doesn't have, which is length off the tee? Or does she play the game that she's always played and play it strategically, pick her courses well, get to know the LPGA courses that she plays on, maybe over the next 2 to 3 years, and then become a winner? Because I don't think she's ever going to overpower courses. The key, sometimes she works an awful lot on her putting. Who doesn't? But she has to, because she doesn't have the advantages that other players have in terms of length. But she is a beautiful wedge player, brilliant iron player, always keeps the ball in play. She's sort of like a Luke Donald type mm-hmm. of player, and he got to world number one. So this is a hugely exciting time for her, but I'm hoping that she doesn't change the game that comes naturally to her.
Well, you spoke to her today. Let's hear from her.
It's a brand new event to kick off the season here in Florida. So, it's a really nice golf course. A little on the longer end maybe, but hopefully you can play into my strength a little bit. There's a little bit, quite a lot of bunkers off the tee and stuff, so strategy is required as well. So yeah, excited to get going, and should be a good test to start off the year.
And tell me about your really hectic first 4 weeks or 5 weeks of a schedule. You really are not just going to be staying put in Florida, that's for sure.
No, I mean, Florida this week, and then I have a few days off and going to stay here in Florida, and then I head down to Australia for 4 weeks, three tournaments down there, and then off to China. So that's what's ahead of me. Looking forward to it. I loved Australia last year. It was probably one of my favourite stops we made last year. So really looking forward to getting down there again. And China will be a brand new experience for me. So
that was Leona Maguire speaking to Greg earlier. It is an exciting year for her, Gary.
It is. It's just great. It's great for Irish women's golf as well to have, you know, someone for young kids coming through, and obviously young players on the national team as well, to have someone to look up to. She is in a lonely place in the sense that she's kind of carrying the flag, or carrying the torch rather, but it's a hugely exciting time for her. She's exactly where she wants to be, the place she would have dreamt of being, you know, a professional on the LPGA Tour, and she just has to embrace that and realise, because she's good enough, she's out there. As Greg said, stick to the game that got her out there. That's the most important thing, and let her confidence grow within that.
Sorry, there's one thing when I was speaking to her earlier and we were just chatting, she's got Gary Marshall on her back. Do you know Gary?
Yes.
He was MJ Herr, who won the Scottish Open last year, which was a big event on the, it was an LPGA Tour event, in fact. He's on her bag. So she's got a top caddy.
Yeah.
How does she go about getting a caddy of that stature?
Well, she is one of the world's greatest amateur players in history. You know, so, I mean, she has status. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll be looking at that bag and thinking, yeah, this could be a player that's going to be a meal ticket for a long, long time, because she is a very steady player. The question is, does she make this leap? Gary, you're the one who knows. You see this. You see amateurs coming off.
It's turning pro, and it can
happen for some and doesn't happen for others.
Yeah, it's her approach, her mental approach to what's in front of her, who she's playing with, how she adapts to being around better players, because there's no doubt, you know, some players out there are better than her, but she can learn the ropes as she's at it. But the caddy's role is very important in it too, and hopefully that relationship works out. But it's their communication is key.
And speaking of amateurs, Tom McKibben had a great week in Australia.
Mm. Yeah, Tom McKibben is, he's from Hollywood in County Down, so he's from the same club as Rory McIlroy. And the comparisons have been enormous, but they shouldn't be, because Tom is about 6'2". He's 17. He's just turned 17. He was on Golf Channel, I think, just over a year ago. He was still 15 at the time. His balls, they had him on the launch monitor, which measures ball speed and swing speed. His numbers were exactly those of a middle rank to upper level sort of I suppose, longer than average PGA Tour player when he was 15. He hits it miles. He's a really good putter. He's a lovely lad, a very, very sort of calm individual. Goes about his business really well. Got a lot of admirers in Australia at the Royal Queensland Club. I had a few members who, I happen to know someone who knows a few members, and I was on Twitter, and they all got back to say, this guy was an absolute ambassador for Irish golf, and he's only 17. So he has a lovely sort of demeanour and head on his shoulders as well. So all of these things add up to a player who's going to make a big splash this year. Last year, he won the Peter McAvoy, which is the English Boys Championship. And the following week, he went from Copteith, where that was held in Birmingham, over to Sage Valley, 20 miles from Augusta, and won the Sage Invitational. Previous winners of the Sage Invitational over the past 4 years, Joachim Niemann, Marcus Kinholt. Kinholt won the British Masters last year from Tommy Fleetwood. Niemann was on the President's Cup team for the international team. And Scottie Scheffler, who almost won last week. They're winners of the Sage Invitational in 3 of the last 4 years. And he won it. And he won it at 16 years of age, competing against 18-year-olds. So he's special.
Gary, the headlines in Australia were calling him Mini McIlroy. A lot of pressure comes with that.
He's about 10 inches taller than him.
I know, it's a weird thing. I think it's, you know, they have to micromanage that situation. He's obviously a hugely talented kid. He's going to go to college. Well, he's supposed to go to college in the University of Florida next year. And I hope he does that, because there's no massive rush to get out there. You know, if you want to be a golf professional, there's no massive rush to do it quickly. It was just great to see, you know, another Irish player in the final of that, after Conor Purcell last season. But it's just, you know, these kids are, they're travelling a lot. They're more than exposed now to plenty of top-end golf, and it will stand to them.
And Jedediah Morgan, who he lost to in the final of the Australian Amateur, and the Australian Amateur will be one of the bigger amateur titles in the world. Jedediah Morgan is a member of that club in Royal Queensland. So he would have had a huge amount of local knowledge as an advantage. And Tom went 6 down after 12 and fought all the way back to be 3 down with 7 to play. So he's got guts, you know. So there's a lot going on. Hopefully he's going to be the next Tom McKibben and not the next Rory.
Exactly, no. Yeah.
With a bit of luck for him. Obviously, guys, it's the 21st of January, so that means Jack Nicklaus's birthday. Yeah. And today he was 80.
Yeah.
So seeing as the two of ye are RTE's golf gurus, we're going to have a little quiz on Jack Nicklaus.
Oh gosh.
For the two of ye. So we'll start with you, Greg. Jack Nicklaus won 30 times in his 20s. Can you name the only player to have won more times in his 20s?
Tiger.
Well done. He wanted the easy one, so I have a harder one for you, Gary. He won 38 times in his 30s. Can you name the only two players to have won more times in their 30s? And they're older.
Say that again, sorry.
He won 38 times in his 30s.
Yeah.
And only two players have won more often in their 30s.
Only two players have won more often. Well, Tiger obviously won.
No. Tiger's in his 20s. Older, I did say older.
Vijay Singh?
No. 1-0 to Greg. Arnold Palmer and Ben Hogan. How many Masters did he win?
Jack won 6.
Very well done. Hard one for you,
so
Gary.
So it's a home and away, and I'm getting all the away questions, is it?
Basically, okay. Yeah.
Basically.
How many times did he win worldwide?
Many times did Jack win worldwide?
You have got the away questions, in fairness.
72.
To the nearest 5. 105 times.
Wow. Yeah.
What age was he when he first broke 70 for the first time?
Ooh. I'd say 11.
13.
Oh, gosh. Wrong again.
What age was he when he won his first Masters, the youngest in history?
The youngest in history?
Yeah.
I'd say... There's no way he was younger than Spieth.
At the time.
I'd say 23.
Oh, yeah, good guess.
Bang on.
This is a difficult one, but I thought it was kind of funny. He earned his first paycheck as a pro in 1962 in Los Angeles. How much did he win?
Ruby, where do you get these
I
from?
I tell you, I found it on the internet. This is actually now in Think Small.
Gosh.
How times have changed?
No, $1,200.
$33.33.
Okay, I was slightly out.
And his final hole in an Open Championship to finish his major career was in St. Andrews. What did he do at the last hole?
I thought you were going to say what was the number of the golf ball he was using, the way these are going. what did he do? He birdied the last hole.
He did?
Yeah.
2-all.
2-all. Thanks a million, guys. We'll take a break.
Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 6.